I think there's a problem in our reading this morning. And it's not a problem that I have ever addressed as I have thought about or taught from this passage. So I'm thinking today might be a good day to address it. The problem is this. What about the widow? Let's look at the reading and I will explain what I mean by that. Our passage this morning, as you heard, contains two clear parts. And when you first read it, those parts can seem quite unrelated. We've joined Jesus and his disciples in Jerusalem for what will be the final week of Jesus' life. It's just a few days before his crucifixion. And while the disciples still haven't grasped what's coming yet, Jesus knows. You can sense it in all that is going on. He's riled up the temple authorities. He's thrown the tables over in the temple and has proclaimed it to be a den of robbers. And now he's returned and he's teaching in and around the temple once again. Our reading today is actually the culmination of a long section that describes several interactions he's had with various religious leaders as he's been teaching. On just this one day, he's had 5 confrontations with different Jewish authorities. 5 of them. And now here in the first part of our reading, we get to hear the 6th of them. So you have this sense, if you read broader, that the air is filled with conflict. He's being challenged one after another by them. And these aren't the kind of challenges that simply question the legitimacy of his authority. No, they're the kind of challenges that are actually designed to undermine it. They're throwing questions at him. They're trying to trap him into saying something that will get him arrested. Some of them were kind of no-win questions, like, hey, Jesus, is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Others of them were misleading. Questions about life after the resurrection. Problem is, they were coming from a sect of Judaism that didn't actually believe in the resurrection. And so Jesus, he seems to have had enough. And so he pushes back. He tells his disciples to beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and be greeted with respect in the marketplaces, to have the best seats in the synagogues and places of honor at the banquets. And then he says, they devour widows' houses. And for the sake of appearance, they say long prayers, but they will receive the greater condemnation. Now I have to confess, as someone who walks around here in a long robe sometimes, that's a little nerve-wracking. He's calling them on their desire for prestige, on their one-upmanship going on in their ranks, and worst of all, for financially abusing some widowed women who were part of their congregation. He's basically accusing them of being charlatans. Well, if they hadn't been wanting to get rid of him before now, just what he said in those few sentences would have done the trick. As it was, he's just adding more fuel to a fire that was already blazing pretty well at this point. So that's the first half of our reading. It concludes this extended section of escalating conflict. But the second half of the reading shifts quite markedly, both in location and in tone, to the point that it's jarring. It almost doesn't seem to be related to the first part. Jesus and his disciples have moved from wherever it was in the temple that he was teaching, and they've gone to the only part of the temple that women were allowed in, the court of women it was called. They sat down there, probably on some of the portico steps that kind of ran along the side. And they've watched as people come in and deposit their offering in the treasury chests that were situated across from them. It seemed that that day there were many people who were well off who were brought sizable offerings in. But Jesus doesn't seem to take special note of them. he notices one poor widow who was only able to give two small coins because, as he told his friends, it was all she had. He commends her gift. He tells his disciples that small as it may be, it's actually worth far more than all of the other larger gifts. He says, for all of them, the well-off people, have contributed out of their abundance. But she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had, all she had to live on. Which brings us to our problem. This woman has just given her last two pennies to the temple. There's no pension check coming in the mail for this woman. She doesn't have any ability to earn money on her own in some other way. To make matters worse, this scene comes right on the heels of Jesus' condemnation of some of the temple's leaders. So it would appear that she has given her last two pennies to an at best flawed, at worst corrupt, religious institution. Does anybody but me want to ask her why she would do that? Even more, don't you want to know why Jesus was commending her actions to his disciples? I am not trying to undermine Jesus here, but I think an honest look at this story means that we don't just step around this problem and ignore it. Is Jesus really saying that he expects an impoverished person to give the last of their money to the church, imperfect as we obviously are, and so leave themselves without any means to survive? Is that what Jesus is saying? It doesn't sound quite right, does it? Especially given what we know about God and his call for his people to care for those who are the most vulnerable in the world. Remember, God's heart is particularly tender towards those who face large hurdles in life, and this woman had three fair-sized hurdles in front of her. First, she's a woman. So she, in that culture, in that society, was unable to support herself. She's forced to rely on her husband or on a male relative to take her in and look after her, if there is one around. Second, we know she's a widow, which means she didn't have a husband to take care of her. And third, she's poor, which means she apparently didn't have any family who had the means to take care of her. So she really is among the most vulnerable in her society. Now, we know that God would not want to see her destitute. So then why would Jesus commend her act of giving? Well, for us here today, I think there might be two reasons that Jesus has us looking at this story, and I truly believe he leads us to these each week. I think as we look at these reasons he's got us looking at it, it starts to make some sense. In verse 44, we hear Jesus explain to his disciples that while the rich people had made their offerings out of their abundance, this widow had given out of her poverty, her scarcity. She had very little money. And that yet that day she was drawn to put everything she had into the offering. For the widow, money was likely her scarcest resource. And yet even that she was willing to give freely to God. And because of this, Jesus explains that in God's way of looking at things, her offering was actually worth far more than all the others. Her financial resources were scarce, and yet she was willing to give all that she could. Well, the first thing we can know from this story is that Jesus looks at our offerings the same way. But let's think bigger. Let's think bigger than money. Let's think about all of the ways we offer ourselves, aspects of our lives to God. For some of us, finances might be our scarcest resource. For others, it's other aspects of our lives. Some of us are so busy and our lives are so full that time may actually be precious and scarce. I have a dear friend who challenged me once. She said, "Diane, it's easy for you to tithe your money. What if you chose to give God 10% of your time? Could you do that? What would it cost you?" She was making a very good point. Because for many of us, it is our time that is limited and precious. So time may be one of our scarcest resources, and therefore one of the most difficult things for us to give to God. As we think of this widow, we might be prompted to think about how much of our time we are drawn to give. For others of us, more than our time, it's our energy that's in short supply. As we age, we know our energy becomes more and more limited. So rather than this being a story about a poor widow, what if it was a story about a widow whose health is declining? She only had enough energy to manage her own daily tasks. But yet she quite intentionally chooses to use some of that praying for her family, for her friends, for those in her life who she knows are in need of God's love and care. Imagine what Jesus would say about her. Look at that precious woman. All the others have been offering their service out of an abundance of energy, but she has given what little she has left to be part of my work. How precious and beloved is she in my sight. So that's the first thing I think Jesus might want us to look at, this idea of giving out of what is scarce to us. The second reason Jesus might want us to consider this story is actually rather timely, and that's always worth paying attention to. If you think about it, there are generally two reasons that we give. Sometimes we give because we feel a sense of obligation. This is my church, and I share in the responsibility we all have to support its work. This thinking isn't wrong. We are called to support our local church. It's part of the practice of our faith. But we know that under the Old Testament laws about offerings, the laws which would have governed this woman making her offering, the poor were actually not obligated to give beyond their means. There were actually specific provisions in the law so that those who couldn't afford the prescribed offering could make one that fit their economic circumstances. Remember, God is a God of justice. And so his laws ensure that there is justice for those who can often get overlooked in our society. So if she wasn't giving out of a sense of obligation, why was she giving the last of her money away that day? I think Jesus was commending her because her actions actually reveal a second, deeper reason that we give. She wasn't giving that day because she was expected to. She was giving that day because she wanted to. Something drew her to give all she had, and I think that that something was probably hope. She was daring to hope in the God who is at the center of her Jewish faith. She was daring to continue to hope in the movement of her God in this world. I think this woman gave her last 2 cents as a profound statement of trust that God truly was her best hope. So she chose to give all she had, trusting in his work of bringing life and wholeness, trusting that in some way he would bring life and wholeness to her. I said earlier that it would appear that this woman had given the last of her money to a sketchy religious institution. Well, it turns out that that statement wasn't quite right, was it? Yes, the institution had its flaws, as we know all too well right now. All religious institutions actually do. But my statement about what she was doing was wrong. The widow isn't giving her pennies to the institution. Her hope wasn't in the institution. Our hope never, ever is. If we are encouraged by one thing this morning, maybe that's it. Ultimately, she was giving to God, who she believed was still working in and through that same institution. She was trusting that God would use that gift to bring life. This widow wanted to take her part in God's mission, a mission she believed in so much that she quite literally gave everything she had for it. And so Jesus has commended her to us today. Her trust and her belief in God is exemplary. We are invited to let our giving in all of its forms be motivated by that same sense of belief that she had, a belief in the goodness of God and in God's mission and work in this world. It's easy to get distracted by problems in this strange institution that we call the church. Right now, as Phil shared earlier in the encouragement minute, it's particularly easy to be distracted by the problems we're going through in our branch of this United Church of Canada. But we must not. You mustn't get distracted. And even more, you mustn't let people like Phil and I get distracted, because we will be sorely tempted to. That's exactly why the work we are doing together as a congregation right now, developing and clearly stating our vision for where God's calling us and our strategic plan for how we're going to get there, that's why this work is so important. We must hold firm to our belief that as Christ's church, we have been commissioned by him to participate in God's work of mending this broken world. It's so important. It's what fuels all that we do. It's what draws each of us to be involved and to give to that work in a variety of ways. Not our belief in the institution, our belief in the God of the institution. So just before we finish, let's go back to the widow from the temple that day, because I find myself wondering what happened to her. We know from the first half of our reading that Jesus has been very critical of some of the Jewish leaders of the day. They had become focused on self-preservation, and that they had become more driven by that than by their call to embody the heart of God in the world. That's why he turned over the tables in the temple and had set up this long string of confrontations that happened on this one day. We also know that Jesus was about to sacrifice all of himself to bring about a change. He was launching a new chapter in God's story in the world. He was about to draw together a new community of people. People who would be filled with and led by God's own Spirit to live out their love of God and their love for others. And as they embarked on that new chapter, I wonder if some of Jesus' friends who had been at the temple that day, I wonder if they might have taken it upon themselves to go find her, to ensure that that widow and others like her were not left destitute. I wonder if she found herself embraced within that new community, cared for, loved, looked after, so that she could continue to live out her deep faith and so inspire others with her determination to be a part of God's work in all the ways that she could until the end of her days. Amen.